on today's Run to the Top podcast.
We do all this research work, right? And the reality is that you spend all this time and effort doing this study, and you know the media wants to digest things down to one simple phrase, such as everyone should land their forefoot, or everybody should land their heel, or whatever. And it cracks you up. Like, there's a right way to run landing on your forefoot, and a wrong way to run landing on your forefoot. And it's like, it's just, there's all these subtleties that go behind it, which are a deeper level. And I find that a lot of times I'm able to communicate really well with people because we're able to have conversations like this. But one of the problems is that the media likes to take our comments from a study or from an exercise and distill it down to one simple nugget of information that, you know, may make a headline, but the substance in there gets lost.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Tina Muir.
Hello, this is Tina Muir. Thank you so much for being here with me today for the latest episode of the Run to the Top podcast brought to you by Runners Connect. So last week we heard from Hannah Smith, who shared an amazing story of being told how she wouldn't make it to Christmas. She went through two rounds of chemotherapy and a surgery, in which time she lost 2/3 of her stomach, but she's still determined to make the most of her life and is running and racing for charity and actually says her life is better. It was an amazing interview. So today we're going to talk to one of the world experts of our time. I'm so excited for this one. And most of you probably have heard of Jay Dechary, but if you haven't, you probably should take some time to look him up. So Jay has way too many accolades to his name to mention, but just trust me when I say he has a lot. And he's changed the running world for the better in just so many ways. You're going to get so much from this interview. He breaks down a lot of the confusing parts of biomechanics. I don't know if you remember, but when we interviewed the gate guys, what they were saying was fascinating and so helpful, but at the same time, it was kind of terrifying. I don't know about you, but it went so far over my head, it was hard to understand. Not that there's anything against them, but like they said, they needed you to come in and see them rather than just listening to a podcast. Well, Jay picks some of the important points of working on form and explains exactly how to figure out what's going on and how you can work on it. So one warning though, there is no quick fix here. You have to be prepared to put in the time. This is one you probably are going to want a piece of paper and maybe listen to again. So get ready with some notes. If you're ready, after a quick word from our sponsor, we will be right to the interview with Jay.
I want to say a big thank you to Body Health for sponsoring this podcast and for helping me with my training over the last few years. You can enter to win a pack of 6 Perfect Amino bottles for free by visiting runnersconnect.net/bodyhealth. Thank you to Saucony for supporting the Run to the Top podcast. Running might be a low maintenance sport, but a good pair of running shoes is a must. Use coupon code TINA for 10% off at saucony.com when you pick out your next pair.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast, Jay.
Thanks for having me, Tina. Great to be here.
Great to have you on. You are someone who has been requested, I have to say, second most often. First is Meb. People just love their Meb. But you are definitely second to Meb. So it's great to actually finally get you on here. And I've heard so many good things from so many good people. So looking forward to this. So you are pretty world renowned for being an expert in biomechanics. And I just wanted to kind of start maybe with your background or when you kind of discovered that this was like your passion and something that you really wanted to kind of chase after and learn about.
Yeah, I discovered this is my passion when I was in high school because I kept getting hurt and nobody could help me.
That's always one way of learning it.
Exactly. Yeah. So I just kept getting the same old, you know, take some time off and rest and things get better. And that approach didn't work for me. I swam probably 15, 20 hours a week and was sort of like pushed into cross country, I think it's a friendly way of saying it, by my high school. And I had lots of fitness, but kept getting hurt because I didn't have the, you know, kind of the running background, right? I had a big motor, but I had my chassis basically was just weak and kept getting overuse injuries, mostly knee problems. And, you know, to have that chronically for years was very frustrating and couldn't get the right answers I wanted. and ended up kind of getting interest in movement science, and ended up into physical therapy. I had a great career in outpatient medicine for about 5 years, and then kind of got frustrated that some of the stuff we were traditionally doing as in PT as therapists wasn't really working. And was lucky enough to kind of work my way into a position to work at the Gait and Biomechanics Center at University of Virginia. Dr. Casey Kerrigan and Bob Wilder put together one of the most amazing labs still in the whole world over there. And, you know, one day I walked in and said, hey, look, we do all this great research and, you know, wonderful, you know, work for academic, but, you know, what can we do for the average Joe? Like, why don't we offer this stuff for individual performance analysis and injury analysis? And they're like, that sounds like an interesting concept. So yeah, we launched a Speed Clinic, and Speed Clinic was a very novel thing because all this stuff that people dream about, you know, going to Olympic Training Center and getting analyzed by the best of the best and doing all this work, like anybody can do that now, right? So we were one of the first facilities in North America, actually the first facility in North America to use biomechanics labs to help individuals. Mm-hmm. So it was a great venture, did that for about a decade, and then I kind of worked my way out west, and now I live in Bend, Oregon, and have another lab here, and still do a bunch of collaboration stuff with EVA. So yeah, it's all good.
Yeah, no, and I loved hearing the development there, and it is kind of cool. I'm sure most people listening know this by now, but I have been to UVA, as I mentioned to you just a few minutes ago, 3 times. Keep going back for improvements, and I've recommended it before. We have had Max Procopy on in the past on this podcast. I'll put a link in the show notes for everyone, and you know, it's been interesting to hear you kind of talk about it. And you mentioned right at the beginning that you were kind of frustrated with what PTs were being taught and what kind of you were learning. So I'm guessing you still get quite a lot of that now, right? There's a lot of misinformation being portrayed still within the PT world, or maybe within just the sporting world in general, or do you not see that so much anymore?
No, there's a ton of confusion. I mean, you know, what's been taught for, you know, 2 decades ago in PT and even, I'll just say musculoskeletal medicine, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just therapy. It's, you know, physicians, therapists, chiropractors, mm-hmm. massage therapists, et cetera. I mean, you kind of had this like old guard, and, you know, there was research being done, but then that stuff was translated over. And, you know, biomechanics research up until the past 15 years or so was tremendously inaccessible. I mean, there were hardly any tools to measure the stuff we want to look at. And even when you measure things and did a study, nobody's able to translate that into real world action for somebody, right? So what I really change about the way I'm training, or it's like that was just a great area. And then so you had the coaching background coming in, which said, you know, research is hogwash and all it does is prove what won yesterday. And my mission was to try and take those things and blend them. And I think that's where our profession's gone. I think, you know, we're now at the state where there's a big database of information out there. People are getting much more savvy at reading literature and doing better case studies and finding out what does work. So I think, I mean, if you look at what they're taught today versus, you know, 20 years ago, it's a whole different field.
Mm-hmm. And so do you find that you still kind of get a bit frustrated with when you're talking to people who may say, you know, for example, I get a lot of the time people say, oh, are you sure running is good for you? Isn't it bad for your knees? But, you know, that's kind of just people, you know, say these things without actually researching it. But you're saying that people are actually getting better at it. Now they can, you know, read literature a little bit better.
I would say that, okay, let me, that's a great point. I would say newer clinicians are getting better and savvy clinicians are getting better. I mean, I think there's some older people, you know, older clinicians with a wealth of experience doing a great job as well. But I'd say that, yes, there's still the folks out there saying running is going to kill you and you need to stop and everyone must run in a super stable motion control shoe and all these things you've heard for years. And mm-hmm. It's just, yeah, even this is kind of a funny story, but years ago we had the American Academy of Physical Medicine Rehab, and we have one full day on, you know, what stretching does to the body. Right. And so you basically, we can talk about this later if you want, but you know, the idea is that, you know, you should never stretch prior to exercise. And there's a bunch of performance decrements that are associated with that. And, you know, people actually perform worse if you stretch prior to activity. So anyway, they had this, you know, tons of presentations all day long, academic presentations. And the next morning there was a fundraiser run. And one of the, you know, physicians basically stood up and said, okay, let's, you know, Dr. So-and-so is going to lead us in stretches and before our race. And somebody said, wait a second, did we, was a bad idea? And we're like, yep, you're right, forget it. And it just shows you, like, that habit that we all have of like, oh, we should stretch before you run because that's what you do, is like, that's ingrained in the runner psyche. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have any place, but it's ingrained in the runner psyche. And so I find that, you know, a lot of those things just kind of perpetuated for years and years through, you know, older coaches, older runners, older clinicians. It just trickles down. And you know, it's nice to call a spade and say, okay, well, why are we doing this? You know, what's the point? And I think that's where we are right now. I think people are asking better questions. We don't have all the answers yet, but by far, we're still seeking answers to a lot of things. But you know, the technology's out there, the academic research is out there, the passion's there to find out better solutions to problems. And I think that's where we are right now.
Mm-hmm. Which is good, and hopefully continues to move in that direction. And clearly, with all the things that you've been able to do, your book, Anatomy for Runners, numerous publications, you know, director of the Speed Clinic, and now your REP lab, you are clearly a leader. But what is it that keeps you kind of wanting to keep exploring? Like, is it just things like this? Like, you want to teach people the right way to do things? Or is there a reason deep down that you want to keep learning? Or does it kind of ever get old of where you're kind of fed up of being that person that's kind of paving the way?
No, I don't like being the person paving the way. I like being the person helping people. it's a great question. I mean, I think that, you know, somebody I respect a lot, Joe Friel, had said, you know, years ago, I went to one of his talks when I was first out of school, and he made the point, you know, the stuff I'm doing today is different than the things I was doing, you know, even, you know, 5 years ago, because, you know, I want to get better and I want to learn, and mm-hmm. I'll be honest, I get bored too. So, I would say that the things I'm doing are always iterating. You know, I know right now everybody's got that quest to make things super simple and what's the one thing to do. And, you know, the reality is life isn't that simple, right? If it was, then nobody would have problems. But I'd say that, yeah, I think I'm definitely trying to make things better, and easier to fit in. And, I think explain things better. I think one of the big, you know, asks that we're making of runners is, you know, to take some extra time to take care of themselves. And, you know, some people get it because they've been hurt and they're sick of being on this pain train. And they're willing to put the work in. And some people haven't had those problems, which is great. But you know, they only are interested in, you know, they might have that idea that, oh, wow, I might get hurt later, or, you know, they may not be looking at performance, right? So why should I take extra time to work mm-hmm. on other things? So, mm-hmm. I think it's the idea is to help each individual person. I think that's really, really what it comes down to. And, you know, it's nice to do things that, you know, help the greater academic science. I mean, you're right, writing books and publishing is great, but I mean, at the end of the day, I really want every runner to be happy with what they're doing and enjoy it more. And that's really what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm. And is there anything that kind of surprised you along this journey, like that was unexpected that you've learned about runners or about, you know, this prehab or staying healthy thing?
Tons. Yeah, I mean, it basically, like, I mean, so many things are just like flown in the face. I mean, things I've been taught for years is completely not true. You've learned a lot of little jewels on the way and what happens and when you, you know, challenge this belief, right? Mm-hmm. And some of that goes into, you know, looking at what happens to orthotics. Some of it's looking at footwear. Some of it's looking at, you know, the way you run. Some of it's looking at all these things. And it's really interesting to me that, you know, we do all this research work, right? And the reality is that, you know, you spend all this time and effort doing this study and, you know, the media wants to digest things down to one simple phrase, such as everyone should land their forefoot or mm-hmm. everybody should land their heel or whatever. And, you know, it cracks you up. Like, there's a right way to run landing on your forefoot and a wrong way to run landing on your forefoot. And it's like, it's just, there's all these subtleties that go behind it, which are a deeper level. And, mm-hmm. I find that a lot of times, you know, I feel like I'm able to communicate really well with people because we're able to have conversations like this. But one of the problems is that the media likes to take our comments and, you know, from a study or from an exercise or whatever, and distill it down to one simple nugget of information that kind of, you know, make a headline, but the substance in there gets lost, right? So the idea is, you know, why should everyone, you know, look at hip strengthening, or why should everyone, you know, run a certain way, and the headline loses the real impact. So it's just trying to, you know, use opportunities like this to have a deeper discussion through podcasts, use, you know, books, obviously, but one-on-one, you know, I think evaluation is a great way to really learn what do I have to do, right? So mm-hmm. it's just, you know, it's taken that that knowledge that we see from the research side that, you know, you can find if you look up PubMed and Medline for those of your listeners who really are, you know, get down into the specifics of running science. But more importantly, you know, how do you make things actionable for most folks is what mm-hmm. it comes down to. Mm-hmm.
So if someone is listening right now and they're thinking, okay, you know, I want to keep up to date with these things, you've said that they're constantly changing, and they're thinking, you know, you're obviously one great person to follow, but what are some other people that you really look up to? Like you mentioned Joe Friel. Who else could they kind of look for up-to-date information?
Oh, man, it's a bunch of people. First of all, it depends what topic you're looking on, right? I mean, let's give you an example. I mean, you take somebody like Jack Daniels. I mean, he's, you know, been around for forever. But if you want to find out about altitude science, I mean, he's probably got the biggest real database of mm-hmm. performance metrics on runners of anyone I've ever met in my life, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just, he's got research, sure, but he's got real times and showing what happens when you take, you know, athlete A and stick them at altitude versus athlete B at altitude, what happens to their race performance. So it's like, I think you need to find who's been out there doing the research in that field. I'm a biomechanics nerd. So, you know, yeah, I hang out with, you know, Brian Heiderscheidt and Chris Powers and Irene Davis and all these people. So it's like, there's tons of folks out there. I think, you know, the people I look up to and the people I draw from and like to talk to are some of the people doing research in my world. And, you mm-hmm. know, folks like Reid Ferber come to, you know, we host the conference at University of Virginia for it was our 15th year coming up this year in March. And, you know, we've had just, you know, great interaction on running science. And it's been awesome to get like the forefront leaders out there and have, you know, true roundtable discussions and present research and find out what's relevant. So,
and can anyone go to that, or is that the experts only, I guess, and you guys portray the information?
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely had some lay folk come to that, and we don't turn them away, but it is definitely a clinical conference. Okay. I mean, I think with the people we've had in the past are like, wow, that was pretty
over
in depth.
My head. Yeah.
And it's not designed to be that way, right? So it's designed to be for the clinician. But yeah, it's a great conference, and I think it's one of the more I would say one of the things I'm more proud of in my career. It's just been, it's the longest running conference that I know of in the mm-hmm. world. So it's been a great avenue to help people learn. So.
And what was the name of it again?
It's the, Running Medicine Conference. At
Running
University.
Medicine. Okay.
Yeah. So Dr. Bob Wilder, Eric Magro, and myself started this 15 years ago. And we're still chugging strong.
Okay. Great. Well, I'll put links in the show notes for everyone to look at. And obviously, you heard a lot of the people he mentioned, who I will also put in the show notes for you to kind of keep up to date with them. So, you know, Anatomy for Runners has done very well. I know that's one of my husband's favorite running books. And one of my listeners actually asked if I could ask you, if you could go back and rewrite, is there anything you would change that jumps to mind immediately?
Yeah, I think... So it's kind of funny. So I wrote that book. The goal was to have something which distilled down a lot of really complex neuroscience and biomechanics about the way we run into something that didn't really exist, which is kind of level for, I'd say, very, very, very savvy runners and coaches mm-hmm. and even clinicians who had a good clinical mind but didn't really understand running. And I wrote the entire book. And I gave it to one of my friends who worked at our lab just to kind of, you know, just curious on his thoughts. And the second I put it in his hands, I said, wow, I need to rewrite this entire thing and make it simpler. And he even worked with me and like every day. And so I went back home, I rewrote the entire book. And I, like, I would say the content stayed the same, but I tried to use much more analogies and make it much more, you know, relatable. And so I feel like Anatomy for Runners, I would say that no, from as far as the content in the book, I wouldn't have changed anything the way things were explained or listed. I think everything's pretty much stepped through the test of time. It's been mm-hmm. out since 2012. And again, the stuff that's in there is pretty robust. I think there is always, you know, would I like to add more content to it? Sure. There's other things I'd like to have in there. And there's, you know, there's some other things I'll be doing in the future. But as far as that book, I'm pretty happy the way it turned out. It's heavy reading. It's not a summer beach book, but that's not what it was designed to do. There's plenty of those out there. And my goal is to say, look, if you really want to get serious about this and help yourself, here's a resource to do that. And I think that book's done a great job at that.
Mm-hmm. So you kind of hinted at it there. Is there another book in the works, or is that something that you think about in the next few years?
Yeah, there'll be something coming out in about a year or so.
Okay. Are you able to give us any glimpses of what it's about?
It's going to kind of pick up more where the Ivy Runners left off. It's going to be a little more performance-based, so getting into more strength and power training.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Well, I look forward to hearing about it. So actually, speaking of that, let's ask about that. So you said strength and power training. So what is your thinking on strength training, plyometrics, you know, that explosive power stuff?
Yeah, it's mandatory. I don't know whether I were to say it. It's, you know, there's very good research out there to show that running does not make you strong. Running efficiency does improve when you improve the way that you carry yourself, right? So that comes in from posture alignment, that comes in from the timing of your running gait cycle. It's absolutely mandatory. I don't know why anybody, you know, again, who is concerned about running performance and longevity and health, I don't know why anybody wouldn't do it. And some runners say, wow, you're eating into my schedule. And I would say, again, most runners would benefit much more from dropping their volume and putting in 1 or 2 days of, kind of strength and plyometric work than trying to hold their existing volume. There's so much more of a complementary pattern that you gain in the way you move and body awareness and just, you know, movement mechanics. It's game changing.
Okay, great. And good to hear, especially as we did have Dr. Jordan Santos on in December, and I will put a link in the show notes to that. And he talked about his research that he's done on the Kenyan athletes and just in athletes in general, and how, you know, it was absolutely conclusive that strength training is needed to be able to stay healthy and to run well. So good to hear you back that up. And when it comes to exactly what, are you talking about dumbbells? Are you talking about heavy lifting? Are you talking about, when you say plyometrics, are we talking box jumps? Just make me maybe give us some examples for people who are interested in this, and as your book isn't out for, you know, another year, they won't know exactly what kind of thing they're looking for.
Yeah, great question. So yeah, there's a few things here, right? You can break this down into kind of three categories. So I'm going to break it down into postural endurance, I'll break it down into strength training, and into explosive training, right? So from the postural standpoint, this is not just don't slump or, you know, stand with a straight back. This gets into how you carry yourself when you run, right? So it's no secret that runners get tired as they run. And, you can train to make sure you can, you know, maintain better postural alignment throughout the course of a run, whether it be a shorter intense run or a longer slow, easy run or an ultra or whatever, right? I mean, you're going to get tired. You need to have the postural strength and muscle memory to combat changes in postural alignment. That's mandatory. So that's a chunk of work. I would say that, you know, for that type of training, right, higher repetition, low load exercise works really, really, really well. You can talk about, you know, it's doing body weight things. You can talk about using band work and a bunch of simple things, right? So, core work, medicine ball routines, you know, all that stuff is great. And you know, high repetition, low load work, does great things for posture alignment work. The next two elements are different, right? I mean, to do strength training, you obviously need to have some heavy things to lift. So I know runners say, I don't have access to a gym, I hate going to a gym, whatever. I mean, there are some ways around that in terms of equipment, but at the end of the day, the runners who are serious, find a way to get in the weight room. And I will tell you, the runners I work with, the people I've introduced to this, I don't know any of them who have stopped doing this at all. And that's even from the novice up to the elite level. So I think that once people give this stuff a chance, they find out, wow, I can move some things. And, you know, I noticed that I actually feel better into, you know, 10 miles into my long run. I don't have to make a case anymore. People just get it. Right. So, yeah. When we get into lifting work, we're talking about true strength work. We're talking about, kind of primary movements here. I think everything really comes down to one of two movements, whether something's going to be squat based, which is a vertical motion, or deadlift based, which is more of a front to back type motion. And for those of you readers who aren't familiar with those, they're two very different patterns in how we stabilize things. When you do a vertical motion up and down, there tends to be a certain amount of split between the muscles around the knees and the muscles around the hips. And when you do a vertical motion, like a squat, and then when you do a deadlift type motion, there tends to be more emphasis on hip muscles than knee muscles. And I would say that you have to train both for sure. But my research has shown that overwhelmingly most runners are more deficient in the front to back pattern than the up and down pattern. So the deadlift, the hip hingy type motions tend to get much more translation to fixing a lot of the imbalances that the majority of runners have.
Okay.
Not to say a squat's not important, but it's I would say that if I had put things in kind of, you know, averages, I'd say 2/3 in the hip hinge type motions and 1/3 in the squat type motion. Mm-hmm. And then there we break those down into, you know, double leg exercises, single leg exercises. You know, what's the point of the workout, right? Again, if we're doing things on, you know, more kind of stability type work, then we're doing lots of single leg stuff and lighter weights. And if we're doing you know, maybe even putting some unstable surfaces, but, you know, if your goal is to truly get stronger, you know, we put both feet on the ground, hard ground, not standing on fancy toys and wobble boards. We're on the ground and, you know, we're really trying to drive a lot of load and strength training doesn't depend on time, right? If you say lift this, you know, 250-pound bar, you just lift the bar. I don't time you. I don't care about how long it takes to lift the bar. Strength training is all about, you know, building a bigger reservoir of oomph, right? Of drive. And that has a big role, but there's a big problem. If you just train strength, you lose out on a very, very, very big, aspect of running, which brings us to power work. Okay. And so let's go over just a quick little concept. When you look at, strengthening for runners, or I should say strengthening for any athlete, right? It takes about half a second to develop peak force. So if we say lift this bar, push this bar, do a carry, whatever you're doing, right? It takes time to develop peak strength. It takes about half a second, right? The problem is when you're running, the stance time, the time on ground that we have when we run is between about 0.08 seconds if you're Usain Bolt, okay, up to about, you know, let's say 0.22 to 0.25 for some or average, like, you know, 8-30 minute milers, right? So the time you're on the ground, the time you have to develop force as you run is much less than the time that you get in strength training, right? So power training teaches us to build that strength reserve or deliver that strength reserve in a shorter period of time. And that's much more reflective of running performance. And so you need to have the right balance of strength work and the right balance of explosive training in your program. And that balance should be something that allows you to run well, right? I mean, people will be sore from time to time, but the goal is not to do, you know, CrossFit workouts when you're in there, you know, again, you know, 6 days a week in the gym. You know, the goals for running performance training for runners are just that, right? That's running performance training. You know, if I have athletes who are mountain bikers or they're power lifters or whatever, they do different type of workouts, right? I mean, the goal is to deliver a running specific plan to help you run better, not just to lift more weight in the gym.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And thank you so much for clearing that up. I've definitely talked about this in the past, and I have had my strength coach, Drew Watts, on in the past. I will put a link in the show notes for everyone to listen to. He kind of goes into this a bit more if you are interested in this aspect. And I'll put a link at runnersconnect.net/RC146. So if someone is thinking, okay, I want to do this, I'm not really sure where to look, any thoughts on some traits to look at for someone who kind of knows their stuff when it comes to running performance? Do you have to work with someone who is a runner or understands running? Like, my strength coach has no connection to running other than me, but I feel like I kind of lucked out. What would you say to someone who is looking for someone maybe to work with in a gym, but they're not sure whether this is just going to be someone who's just going to be, like you said, a CrossFitter who is going to just throw them in all the wrong things?
Yeah, so that's a great question, a difficult one to answer. I think you have to look at what your resources are, right? So start the perfect world. If you're savvy or you have a coach you're working with right now, and who understands your running programming, like what type of dosage or frequency, intensity, and time you're putting in from a running standpoint, and can help you balance off, like, you know, when can I put in some other sessions per week, right? So, at that point, you're looking for a strength coach just to help you learn foundational movements, right? To learn how to deadlift and squat properly, and learn what movements are going to be effective for you, right? I'd say that's at, like, the high end. And the low end, I mean, as far as, you know, what you can do, I think there's a lot of good stuff out there these days, right? I mean, as far as, you know, learning how to squat, learning how to deadlift, I mean, there's some good YouTube links all over the place. I personally think that the best thing to do is to find somebody. If you're serious about this, you want to make this part of your training. I mean, yeah, you can look at things online and get some stuff, but I think to find someone in your area, I would ask around your local running groups to find out who other people are working with. I think, most PTs these days, are definitely, again, we talked about that change in practice. I think most folks are definitely in that performance mindset and looking for the bridge, not just to I don't hurt anymore, but how do I truly get better? I would talk to a clinician in your area and find out, you know, hey, look, if you're not the person you recommend me to see to get a, you know, a true prescriptive performance plan, who else would you recommend? I think that's where I'd start. Not knocking CrossFit, not knocking any other of these coined, you know, fitness things. I just think that the idea is, you know, their goals are to get people as, you know, to prime for fitness, yes, right? And again, we're looking for running specific fitness. And some of the movements that I have my athletes do are things that CrossFitters do, right? But yep, we're not doing them in the volume and load that the CrossFitters would be doing. We're trying to get this in something which is, again, gonna improve running economy. That's what it comes down to. If it's not improving running economy and making your body more robust in terms of injury reduction, then you shouldn't be doing it.
Okay, great. Thank you for clearing that up. Okay, and then let's talk about the Saucony Stride Lab. I know this is something that you've been working on for the last few years. And as this podcast is sponsored by Saucony, this kind of caught my eye. I'm being a Saucony runner myself. So maybe you could tell us a bit about this Stride Lab and what people can actually learn from it and how it can help their running if they don't have access to somewhere like, you know, UVA or your REP lab nearby.
Super excited about this whole venture. So when I wrote Anatomy for Runners, there's a bunch of tests in the back. And I think that, a lot of runners did those tests. And I think it's been very powerful in the feedback they got out because they realized, oh, wow, I need to work on this. And it's got a nice little table in there. If you have this problem, work on this. And that's great. But a lot of runners just basically read it with a daiquiri in their hand and did never do anything. And so it was my goal from the start to have some type of interactive way to kind of get back at people, right? So, and give them individual prescription what they need. So we did that. I searched for a while. I found a great partner and Saucony stepped up and we've been working on this for, I would say, for years, talking about what to do and how to deliver it. But I'd say solidly over the past year and a half, and we put together an individualized assessment, right? So you can go on the App Store, the iOS App Store right now, and it's totally free. Download this app and it takes you through an individual kind of a movement screen for runners, right? And you do a bunch of movements. They'll ask you questions. They'll have you video yourself. It'll ask you move the lines, check boxes here, based on what you see. And sometimes we even use the phone to actually measure the way you move. And it gives you an individualized kind of program to get you better. It's an amazing tool. If you said, you know, where do I start? I would start with Stride Lab. It's granted I'm biased, but it's unmatched in terms of, resources to really get people to improve. So it's got the movement screen in there. We've got a very simplistic stride analysis built in right now. We've got some other things coming down the pipeline, but I think that, you know, runners have a hard enough time looking at themselves objectively. And so we've kind of guide you through some things to pick out some problems and give you some feedback on, again, how your running relates to things you should be doing, and also on some drills and kind of stride tips that you can focus on when you're running. And then we also have an aches and pain section there. So somebody's got like, hey, my ankle's flaring up today in the front of the ankle. What should I do? We've got some algorithms built in there to kind of get some, kind of put out some fires before they become big. So it's an amazing tool. And you mentioned about, you know, strength and power work. We have a whole strength and power module, which will be unlocked later this year, probably okay, before summer. So there'll be some, again, more specific information on what to do coming soon.
Oh, very exciting. And I will say I have had a little play around with it, and it is a great tool and really interactive and just kind of makes it fun to see your little weaknesses, your pains and things, and what you can actually do to help and prevent that. So I would definitely recommend checking that out. Make sure you download it and give it a try.
Yeah, the one thing I'd say, just if I could say one thing for listeners, it's I know these days everybody's looking at, you know, that this app should do one thing and the one thing to do, and this app is so not that. I mean, this app actually asks you to make a commitment. It takes about 20 minutes to go through the movement screen, right? It takes about 10 minutes to do the stride assessment, and the aches and pains take seconds. But, you know, how many hours do you spend listening to podcasts, freaking out about injuries you've had on you know, different websites around there, you know, WebMD? It's like, take some time and invest in yourself. And once you do that, we give you daily workouts to do. And they're quick.
And reminders, I think, as well,
reminders,
right?
Reminders, and it keeps track of things. It's an unmatched, amazing interactive tool. So I really ask people to give it a try, because it does, you know, again, like anything, right? What you put in is what you get out of it, and you'll get out of some really amazing things. If you know, mm-hmm. it's no substitute for individual one-on-one eval, right? It's not supposed to be. But if you're somebody who is struggling for some help and you can't find somebody to trust, give it a try.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you mentioned that. And I'm glad you said to do it kind of as a prehab, because I think we're all too guilty of being like, oh, I'm fine. And then, you know, you get something come up and you're like, okay, I'll do everything I possibly can. But then as soon as that's gone, you forget again. And this is a good way of kind of keeping you on top of it, like you mentioned, because it keeps track of you. Yeah. And just curious, so why Saucony? Was it just that, you know, you really felt positive about the direction they were going? Or was there a reason that you chose Saucony to work with?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we talked earlier about, you know, that vision, right? When you have, a study come out and it gets watered down and distilled, and Saucony didn't want to do that. I mean, they were willing to say, hey, look, this isn't the easy button, but it's the right button. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that we shared visions on, you know, how can we help runners? Mm-hmm. The goal is to get more people running so more people like running, right? I mean, you know, what happens is people haven't run. They say running hurts. Well, running shouldn't hurt, right? Running should be healthy, right? But we take this body, which isn't ready to run, and we just throw a bunch of volume at it and kind of keep our fingers crossed. That doesn't work, right? And it's that's why we've got, you know, super high injury rates. It's why people aren't performing as they want to. It's why you aren't hitting the goals you want to. So the goal is to say, hey, look, let's combine vision on helping each person succeed at their best. And that's really what it came down to.
Okay, cool. And were you a part of the design team working with Spencer White on the Freedoms? Have you got to kind of work with those a lot, or have you not been involved with those?
Nope, not the shoe side for them. So, yeah.
Okay. I was just curious as they are the new shoes, and I absolutely love them, but I was just curious if you were a part of that. So one question I had from a listener related to shoes was someone wanted to ask about, let's say you're running in more of like a bulky shoe, maybe a stability or a neutral or just a heavier kind of shoe. Is there a risk with going to do their workouts in a lighter shoe based on your experience when it comes to the biomechanics? Is there an issue with doing workouts or races in those lighter shoes when you train in the heavier shoes, or is that not really a problem?
That's a loaded question.
Sorry. Yep. That was a question from one of my listeners. So I had to ask it.
Okay. So a few things out there real quick. You should have a lot of different pair of shoes you run in, because it's good to expose your body to subtle differences over the, you know, your training cycles. There's a reason why people have racing flats, right? They're lighter. And if you're looking at all the research and want to find out what's faster, a lighter shoe is faster, period. Right. So that's the only thing conclusively we can say is that lightweight shoes are better than a heavier shoe. So now, does a lighter weight shoe have what you need in terms of, you know, again, shock absorption and kind of damping and what I call squishiness and bounciness in terms of how that interacts with your body? I always use analogy. Shoes are kind of like a filter, right? So you can take a firmer, thinner shoe that might perform for you just as well as a softer, cushier shoe by the time you actually load it when you're running, right? So I would say that, yes, it's okay to have a thinner, lighter shoe to race in, and we all should, but I think most people should be running in, you know, firmer, thinner, lighter shoes on the whole.
Okay.
And I would say that one of the big problems, I think, is when people, you know, run from a, you know, traditional kind of, you know, 2-to-1 stack height, meaning the heel is twice as high as the 4-foot shoe, and then basically just, you know, buy like a spike and say, well, you know, their calves are sore, can be a race day. Well, of course, because you basically went from one end of the pendulum to the other, right? That just doesn't work. But, you should be doing part of your training in your shoes you're racing in throughout the week. You don't save them for race day. It's not this holy grail you lift out of the box and magic happens, right? I mean, you have to expose yourself to running in that racing shoe. And there's articles out there that show the forces that we see running in racing flats and spikes are different than the forces we see running in trainers. And if you expose your body to that, prepare it for that, like when you do your interval days, right? It's a great way to do this. You do pretty well. But if you're going to say, hey, look, I'm going to give a certain stress and stimulus to my body throughout the week, and then race day comes around and throw a different type of load on it when I'm performing, you know, near max and things hurt, well, sure, that's you did a great job there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it doesn't work like, you know, people restrict their coffee intake in the week before a race and then like jump with a big cup of coffee and then they get this big buzz. This is going to kind of work in the opposite way to you if you
exactly
practice with it.
Exactly. Okay, and, cool. and to just, you know, if people want specifics, I mean, it's like, you know, again, I would never go from a 20, you know, again, a 12 to 14 mil stack stack differential shoe to a zero, right? But
yeah,
if you're going from a, you know, it's an 8 mil drop to a 4 mil drop, we don't really see many problems with that.
I mean,
you know, that's usually a non issue. So mm-hmm. your body's pretty good at adapting to subtle differences. And one thing, again, that gets lost, people are always worried about how high the heel is over the forefoot. You know, the ramp or the angle of the forefoot makes a big difference too, because you can take you know, a shoe that's a lower drop shoe that has a lot of curve to the ramp of the forefoot acts much more like a higher stack shoe than one that has.
Oh, interesting.
So there's a bunch of things in there that go into. Yeah, it's not just one parameter, right? It's multiple parameters in the shoes.
Mm-hmm. And then one other piece of apparel or running item that people use often, and as the biomechanics expert, you are the person to ask about this. What about the data that Garmin or GPS watches have? Can we trust that with our biomechanics, or is that completely inaccurate in your experience?
Wearable technology is going to be awesome one day.
Okay. That's a good way of putting it.
It's not here yet. Full disclosure, I work with wearable technology. I do a bunch of work with research stuff. I have a bunch of toys of my own. I would say that right now there is nothing out there on the market that I would say is going to get me to change the way I'm running. I have some of that stuff. I use it in my lab. But as far as a mass market device, it's not out yet.
Okay. All right. Well, watch this space, I guess, for the future. Whichever one Jay is recommending is the one you should definitely go after. All right. So I want to dive a little bit deeper into a part of this and what you do that I know people are interested in. And you kind of mentioned, you know, there's no one quick fix. This is the one exercise you need. But when it comes to like imbalances or weaknesses, you know, is it really an issue if one part of your body or one side maybe is stronger than the other? Or is it only really an issue if it actually causes a problem like an injury? Like maybe you could explain imbalance or weaknesses and how people need to kind of look at it in the future.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, you know, if you're a soccer player and you're more accurate, you know, in shooting goal with your right foot, that's fine, right? Mm-hmm. But when you run, both legs have to show up. And so, you know, you're not allowed to have imbalances in terms of strength and power. Those are things I actually specifically measure in my lab. Right now, mm-hmm. we have a bunch of clinics around Central Oregon, and we actually use individualized force and rate of force development screening in all of our athletes in return to play decisions to make sure people are ready to safely return to the sport of their choice. So, mm-hmm. No, I don't believe it's okay to have imbalances, and imbalances will lead to problems at some point, right? It might be at 25 miles a week. It might be at 50 miles a week. It might be at 75 miles per week. I don't know, right? The body adapts pretty well. But where's that break point for each person? It depends on a lot of factors. So I think that, you know, I try and get people as equal, as stable, and as aware as possible. You know, when we talk about imbalances, if I give people an exercise, I tell everybody the same thing. My goal isn't to take more of your time to give you an exercise. I'm not looking to train a muscle. I'm looking to train a movement, right? I want you to learn how to move your body better. Because if you understand, and more importantly, feel something moving differently, right, you'll feel it when you run. And if I can't close that loop and have you feel things when you're running, then I'm just wasting your time, right? So mm-hmm. the idea is to try and really make sure that we address imbalances that specifically affect the way people, again, that, you know, can I maintain good alignment as I run, or am I falling apart, right? Am I getting tired to the point where, you know, I'm starting to have, you know, my cadence changes, you know, consider appreciably, or my time on ground changes appreciably as I'm running because I lost the ability to put force down to the ground. So my simple ability to, you know, because I'm quote weak, my form's breaking down, right? That shouldn't happen. And you'll see these things. I mean, look, just go to any race and watch somebody at the start and watch them at, you know, the midpoint of a marathon or watching the last mile or 10K, and people don't look the same, you know? And mm-hmm. I said, if your goal is to, you know, run as well as you can at your one of your peak races or training runs or whatever, you know, you want to show up ready for that. And ready for that meaning not breaking down your form over the last 500 meters, right? Or whatever. You want that sprint finish to be a true sprint finish, not something you're struggling through. You know, why would you run in such a way where you're working harder to run? That doesn't make sense to me in terms of performance.
So is it like if you do all the strength training, the plyos, the all the form stuff that we talked about, the drills and everything, you're kind of essentially prolonging the amount of time your body is able to hold that good form together? So if you were in a marathon, you know, initially your form might break down at the halfway point, whereas after a year of all this stuff, you are able to hold it together till 20 miles and then eventually to 24 miles. Is that kind of what, am I getting that right?
100%. Yeah. Okay. I look at training very simply, right? I mean, and not just from the movement science, but even from the physiological side, you train backwards, right? What's your goal? What do you want to do? How much time are you looking to take off? Were you trying to increase distance, whatever it is? And if you look at that, ask the question, okay, why can't I hit that? What's been my obstacle to hit that? We train backwards from there. We build a program to hit that, you know, to hit that goal. It's very simple. Mm-hmm. It's not hard. But yes, exactly.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you for clearing that up. And then just as I know, we have a lot of people listening who work full time, maybe they're sitting all day. I have seen something where you did do a talk about stretching. And as you mentioned earlier, you know, don't want to stretch on cold muscles. But what about those runners who are running in the evening and they've been sitting all day? Is stretching going to be able, if they stretched after their work day, but before they ran, is that going to help? Or is there just kind of no point in doing that?
All right. This is a wonderful question. Let's talk. Okay. So the garbage bag of stretching means to make things longer, but let's break things down into mobility, right? Because it means, mm-hmm. can I move, right? And let's break this down into four distinct parts, because this is a huge actionable take home for every person listening to this. All right. So there are four reasons why you may have problems moving. Number one, is a joint limitation. The fancy word for this is called arthrokinematics. All right, so let's use an example of an ankle, because a lot of people who sprain ankles get very stiff, right? And so if you're a person who sprains their ankles a lot of people, when we actually have them do like the traditional runner's calf stretch, you know, go to the wall, kind of bend forward, they'll feel tightness in front of the ankle joint, okay? And if you feel tightness on the side the joint is shortening into, that makes sense. So if you're dorsiflexing, if you're bringing your foot towards your shin and the tightness is on the side that's shortening, right? Mm-hmm. That's a joint block problem, okay? Stretching will not fix that in any way, shape, or form, okay? Mm-hmm. In fact, all it's going to do is really irritate the joint, okay? So that type of thing, what you want to do is find out techniques to actually move the joint, okay? I'll be honest, most of this requires actually seeing someone with skilled hands to do some manual therapy work to get the things moving again, right? But if you have a restriction in the joint moving on the side it's shortening towards, that's a joint mobility problem, okay? And you need manual therapy to fix that, okay? So that's one. Number two, we can have tissues that shorten, okay? So let's say you do your calf stretch, right? And you feel the back of the calf tightening up, okay, excessively, right? So typically, one of the tests I have in the anatomy for runners is basically sit down on the ground and put a foam roller in front of your foot, or put your foot next to a wall. And with your heel down on the ground, you should easily be able to get your knee towards the wall, the knee towards the foam roller, right? And that looks at, again, ability to lengthen the tissues in the back of the calf. If you can't do that due to calf tightness, that tells me that you've got a problem in the length of your the length of your gastroc Achilles soleus complex. Okay? So that does really well with stretching. Okay, and if you're somebody who failed that test, you should stretch. Okay, because we have to physically elongate the tissue, right? And stretching for people with shortened tissues works great. If you're not somebody with shortened tissues, I don't have any of my athletes do any stretching if they have, quote, normal motion for running, okay? And stretching for me, okay, so the true definition of stretching is to physically increase the length of your tissues, okay? So if we're talking about something short, we have to apply stretches, which requires about 3 to 5 minutes of stretching per body part, okay, done 4 to 6 times a week for 10 weeks until you actually see tissues elongate, okay? Wow. People hate that answer. Don't shoot me. Shoot the research. It shows that's the dosage of time it takes to elongate structures. And some people say, that's hogwash. I don't need to stretch that long because I do my little range of motion stuff for 10 seconds and I feel more mobile, which brings us to the next part, okay? Because that person likely wasn't short in their tissues, right? Mm-hmm. They have more just kind of stiffness, okay? And so that stiffness can be one of two parts. So one we get into is there's various words you can use for this, right? But you can call sticky tissues or kind of, you know, tissues kind of just glop down themselves. But the idea is the fascial linings around the muscles, right, tend to get kind of adherent. And so when that gets adherent, the muscle fibers themselves can't slide and glide like they should. And so that's where the whole, you know, this whole, you can call it, you know, this entire, you know, renaissance, I guess, of soft tissue work with, you know, femorals, lacrosse balls, you know, trigger point stuff, whatever, right? Your implement of choice to get your body to move differently, right? So that deal goes back to, can soft tissues glide efficiently, right? So it's just not lengthening, right? It's just about stickiness. To give an example of this, your IT band and your plantar fascia are tremendously stiff, dense tissues. Good luck stretching them. It doesn't work, okay? They become adherent, right? They tend to lock down and become very stiff. And so doing soft tissue mobilizations works very well. We get very good rapid changes in symptoms and rapid changes in tissue mobility by doing soft tissue work, right? And that's a great way to approach that. But it's not stretching. It's doing more soft tissue mobilization type work. So again, that's your foam rollers, your lacrosse balls, your whatever, right?
So can I just pause you there before you, I think you're going to go on to the fourth one. So yeah. Do you recommend runners should be doing foam rolling, that mobility, soft tissue work every day? Or how many times a week would you say just in general?
Yeah, I think every day is probably overkill. I think, you know, 1 or 2 days a week is something we should all be doing, right? I mean, as you run, your body is going to break down and you want all the tissues in your body to heal back in a very nice parallel fiber alignment with scar tissue. Scar tissue is good if it heals back in parallel alignment. When scar tissue heals kind of overheals or tends to kind of become conjointed. I have a great picture of this in Anatomy for Runners. It actually shows real world electromicrograph screenings of chronically trained endurance tissue versus healthy tissue. And if you look at the two back to back, it doesn't take any person with a medical degree to figure out that's not healthy, right? So you want to make sure all that scar tissue heals back in a very linear alignment. If things are in line and you know, as an architecture to it, right, that can withstand load, that's a healthy tissue. If you start putting, you know, random, you know, fibers all over the place, that tissue is not very good at its intended purpose. So some soft tissue work is essential throughout the week for everyone.
Okay. And then the fourth one?
The fourth one, yeah, that gets back to the dynamic mobility part, right? So that's just the fact of, you know, yeah, I'm sitting all day long. My hips have been in a shortened position for 9 hours. Right now I need to go move them, right? So dynamic stretching, right, which is basically just taking your body through its range of motion. That can be, you know, doing a little, you know, kind of like, the hip leg swings, I mean, anything, right? Just doing kind of, you know, cat camel stuff. I mean, just moving a few times, has great effectiveness at improving the way people feel, right? Because it's saying, hey, look, I've been in a short position for a long time. What happens is you dumb down that sensation of tightness in your body. So you're learning to use the motion you have more effectively. So you're learning to be more fluid in your movement that you have available. You're not, quote, stretching, you're not increasing length, but you're helping your body move. So if I can make a little analogy here real quick, I mean, a little kind of summary. Every runner should be doing dynamic mobility work before they run. Notice they call it—
Before every run?
Before every run.
Okay. Notice I do that. Good to hear it.
Yeah. So notice I call it dynamic mobility, not dynamic stretching, because you're not lengthening anything, right? You're just basically saying, hey, let's move. Okay. And that should take like 5 minutes, if that. Okay. It can take 2 minutes. Okay. So simple stuff. I only have runners stretch if they're deficient in range of motion. If we have joint blocks, have those fixed, right? I mean, there are people out there who have profession. That's what they do for a living. Find someone and let them help you, because you're not going to be successful on your own, most likely.
So what kind of careers, what kind of manual therapies are you talking about here?
Physical therapists. I mean, this is what we do.
Okay, right? Physical therapists. Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly what we do, is to get things to move better. And again, like, just, you know, making sure that all the parts can move, right? Ball and socket joints should roll and glide. Even knee joints aren't pure hinges, right? There's rotation in those joints, and all that accessory motion has to be available for things to move correctly, right? And then ongoing soft tissue work is critical to make sure we stay healthy and our bodies recover appropriately after workouts.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for summing that up, and very helpful. And people, you're probably going to have to go through and listen to that part a second time, because that is a lot of information, but absolute gold. So thank you for that, Jay.
No, thank you.
Okay, we are just, I was going to ask you, so do you have one exercise to give every runner that they should do? Just kidding. After all that.
You had to go there, right?
No. I know. I was going to leave it there and see if you could guess that I was kidding, but then I thought, I don't know if you know me well enough to know that yet. But okay, we are just going to take a moment to thank our sponsors, and all you have left is the final kick round, so that question will not be coming back to you.
Yep.
By now, you've probably heard me talk about how a body health perfect amino is the perfect blend of the 8 essential amino acids to help you build and repair your muscles, your tissues, and of course, improve recovery. I take it along with their Complete Plus Detox multivitamin, and during my recent marathon build-up, I took Perfect Amino a few times a day, which allowed me to bounce back from my workouts quicker and to keep training hard so I could have a good race in the fall, which is kind of important, right? Have you used coupon code TINA10 yet? The Body Health team would love to hear your feedback. Yes, another reason I love them. And you can share your experience with Perfect Amino through the show notes for this episode by visiting runnersconnect.net/bodyhealth. Oh, and you can enter to win a 6-pack worth $230 there too. So once again, that link is runnersconnect.net/bodyhealth. I wish you all the luck. This is the time of year many of us commit to being better and doing what we can to reach our goals. For me, it's doing more stretching and mobility work, and you've heard me admit it here, so hold me to it. But once the busyness of life, the nasty weather, and the tiredness from training accumulates in our legs, that motivation slips away, and it can be really hard to get it back. Now, we could reward ourselves with food, but after all that indulging over the holidays, most of us probably need to work on making better choices. We all know that new running shoes or new running clothes have a bit of a power to get us excited about running again, especially if they look stylish. The Saucony Freedom ISO has become my new favourite shoe, not just because they're nice to look at, but because the Everrun sole gives back with every step, so even on my most tired day, I feel like I'm getting a little bit of a push from the ground. I absolutely love them, and I think you will too. So if you live in the US, make sure you use coupon code TINA to get 10% off your order at Saucony.com.
Okay, Jay, just the final kick round left, starting with the greatest advice you've ever received.
Be humble. A lot of great things happen before you were born.
Oh, love that. Great. Very short, sweet, and very effective. Okay, yes. Favorite running book or blog other than your own? I'm interested to hear what you find.
Other than mine? No, I'm joking. Yeah. Steve Magnus is great. I like the way he kind of phrases things, gives point, counterpoint. And again, he's a scientist and a coach, and I respect people who take time to read literature and then also see how it plays out in the real world, right? If you're going to try a certain intervention on your team or an individual, I love folks like that. They're doing things every day, not just talking about them.
Yep, good choice. And actually, Steve has a book coming out in a few months, and we are going to have him on the podcast. So stay tuned for that one. What would you like to tell a brand new runner?
Two things. I would say quantity doesn't matter. Quality matters. So stop obsessing about mileage. And number two, don't compare yourself to your friend you work with or whatever who runs 3 ultras every single year on your first week of running, right? And that's not your goal standard. That may be their goal standard, but everybody adapts and progresses differently. And we had this obsession with miles per week. And I mentioned Jack Daniels earlier. If you ever heard him talk, he'll tell you, how much should you run a week? The least amount of miles to get the best possible result, and that's it. You don't have to go run 100, running 100 miles a week isn't normal.
It's funny you mentioned that because my husband and I had a big discussion in my last marathon build up because I had 99.6 miles for the week. And I was like, can I just go out and do? And he was like, no. And I was like, and he was like, no, and he absolutely would not allow it. He was like, what does it matter? Like 0.4 of a mile. I was like, Yeah, I know. Well, the thing is, I didn't go. Part of me thought about lying and just going out there. But I was like, you know what? If I ended up injured, it would just be, that would just be what would happen with. So I was like, OK, I'll stop. But yeah, I'll tell him that. OK, what is your was your or what? Pre-race meal did you used to have or do you have?
If you ask me what's the best thing to do, it's to get up 3 hours before and have a meal, let your insulin level stabilize and have something before. But I have the hardest time to get up in the morning. I tell you, I just go light. I usually take a peanut butter and smear it on a banana and pop that in and good I'm choice. To go. Yeah, I don't eat a whole lot morning of. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. And finally, favorite running product?
I'll put three things out there because I think everybody should have a lacrosse ball. Usually costs between $2 and $4. You can do a ton with them and even more than a foam roll. I think every runner with foot and ankle issues should go buy a rocker board. They're cheap.
Rocker board.
Yeah. Not a wobble board, but a rocker board that moves on one axis, right? So it just kind of tips front to back. I've put stuff out there. There's stuff in the Stride Lab app. There's lots of great stuff out there on, how to use a rocker board, but it's probably the single best intervention, or device to really improve foot and ankle control. I think they're indispensable. And then man, one thing I bought lately, I like a lot, bought one of those Hyperice, little vibration, balls. And,
I don't think I've seen that.
Yeah, it's been fun. I've been using, we have a really nice one in our clinic. It's a big vibration platform, but you've been using that for some soft tissue work with some athletes and it works really well for recovery.
Okay, cool. Great. Thank you. And then what about if people want to follow up with what you're saying, what you're working on, what would be the best way to keep up to date with you?
Yeah, you can check out our lab blog. You can check out RepOregon, REPOregon.com. We keep some stuff on there, savvy for folks. You can check out MySpace. I have Anatomy for Runners is a book, obviously, and you can check out.
I thought you said MySpace. Then.
It's a bit
old there.
Yeah, I don't think they exist anymore. But yeah, my little world is Anatomy for Runners, and yep. Yeah, I got there doing a bunch of teaching stuff, so you'll see me pop it here and there. So.
Okay. All right. Great. Jay, thank you so much for your time. This has been absolutely insightful and I appreciate it. I'm sure everyone else did. So thank you.
Thank you, Tina. It was great.
I can definitely see why he's one of the leaders of our time. His passion just shows through. And even though you can only imagine the amount of people he must have to explain this to, he still took the time to kind of get it across and give it to us in a realistic and helpful way. I do apologize about the kind of rustling noise you might have been hearing in the first half. I did actually stop it halfway through and it was actually his microphone rubbing on his jacket. So I do apologize about that and thank you for continuing to listen to this point. So I will put links in the show notes to all the things Jay talked about today, all those people he mentioned, all the groups and things he said. And I'll also put a link to the dynamic warm-up drills that I do before my run, because I think that would be a good place for most of you to start. They definitely help me to feel warmed up before my run. And if Jay says a dynamic warm-up can help, then we should really listen, right? The show notes can be found at runnersconnect.net/RC146. So next week, we're going to be talking to a sleep specialist, Luke Gupta, who will tell us all about his research on sleep and performance. It was kind of scary to hear what he said and just how much it affects us and really makes me rethink the way that I'm approaching my sleep. And you probably will too, but you're going to get some great advice and I really suggest you check in. Thank you so much for taking the time to tune in. And if you have a minute and you could review us on iTunes, that would be absolutely fantastic. So thank you so much. So until next time, have a great week.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.